Welcome to the world of Culture Pop with Steve Mason and Sue Kowinski. Culture,
comedy, movies, TV, tech, authors, trends,
pop.
This is the Culture Pop Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 76 of the Culture Pop Podcast. Sue, can you believe it? Episode 76.
Wow, you can get gas now at our podcast.
That's right. This is our Emmy preview show. I'm Steve Mason, along with Sue Kowinski. And our guest today is a comedian, actor, host, and entertainment guru. He currently leads the on-camera work at Rotten Tomatoes. Mark Ellis is here. Mark, thanks a lot for doing this. How are you, man?
Happy 76, y'all. Look, as a comic who spent many hours and years and decades on the road, I've been to a lot of those gas stations, and I can rave about their Cheeto collection.
Fantastic. So I want to start by asking you about a couple of big deal things that seem to be going on. The trailer for Dune came out today. It stars Timothy Chalamet and Oscar Isaac. Why is this such a big deal? When's it coming out?
Oh, my God. Well, if I knew when theaters were reopening, I could give you a better answer on that. But this is one of those movies where you see a trailer for something as sprawling and as epic and as visually stunning as Dune, and you say, yeah, that's worth risking my life to go see that movie. It just looks that good. And Denis Villeneuve was the initial selling point for me because I had heard about Dune from the 80s, and before that, the novels and the lore it was based on. Sting was in the 80s one. That's cool. I never got into it. I had friends that loved it, couldn't shut up about it, never cared about it. But Denis Villeneuve, in that guy's eye, really said, okay, well, maybe this could be something, because I loved what he did with Blade Runner 2049. He's just
Arrival.
Got a visual flair to his cinematography. And then you have that cast. I mean, did you see the names at the end of that trailer? It's just like never ending.
Oh, it's there are so many stars in that movie.
Yeah, so my big takeaway from watching the trailer is that I feel the exact opposite of Anakin Skywalker from Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. He says, I hate sand, and I say, give me more sand.
More sand. So the other thing that's sort of breaking and is a big deal today is Tenet, which is a movie I was dying to see. It's not playing in Southern California. There are theaters across the country. I think it did $20 million this weekend. Have you had a chance to see Tenet?
I have not, Steve. I had an offer. I had an offer to go to Vegas and go see the movie, and I was not able to make it last week. And I have some friends who work for a great conglomerate called Geeks of Color. My friends Dorian and Robert did the drive to Vegas. They went, and they're raving about Tenet. And I think part of that is just the fact that you got to see something that so many of their friends haven't had a chance to check out yet. But if you're a fan of Christopher Nolan, and you see what this guy's been able to do with time-bending-ish, with things like Inception or Interstellar, you know that he makes event movies, and they aren't necessarily event movies where it's based on a comic book or it takes place in a galaxy far, far away, but it's something that you don't want to miss on the big screen. So I don't agree with Christopher Nolan when he says you have to watch my movies on a big screen, but yeah, if I get the opportunity, Tenet is going to be the first one that I see in a movie theater again.
So how come you didn't go to Vegas?
I was working on some other Rotten Tomato stuff in town that I am literally able to announce like next week. you caught me on a bad week. I can't quite say what we've been prepping, but everybody I think is really excited about it. And they have me as one of the leaders of it, which, you know, is their own fault.
Mark, would you risk whatever risk there is, it's a calculated risk, to go in and see a movie in a theater right now?
I think I would. And when I say I take the risk, I would drop the $15 to go into the theater. And knowing my nose and my tummy, I would have to get a large popcorn. That's just how I operate in the movie theater. Sure. I can't say no. And then I'd get in there. And that would really be the test, because I know you can buy tickets and you can see where you're sitting versus other people. But I want the theaters to enforce the rules that they claim to have. And so if I get in there and I see people that are sitting everywhere, if is somebody sitting close to me, if the theater's packed, I would probably gather my stuff and just say, nah, it's not worth it. But if I can get in there and I feel like I'm a safe distance from everybody else, yes, I trust that sort of theater experience. And that's just me not putting it on anybody else. I used to work in a movie theater. Back then, I wasn't the greatest usher in the world. I didn't clean everything. So I hope that the ushers now are better than I was. And I put my faith in them. And for a movie like Tenet, I think I would, Steve.
You know, I used to own movie theaters for a long time. And all I can think is all my friends who own theaters still, independent theaters, what a hard time they're having. Do you think the business can bounce back from this?
First of all, I would love to steal that line at a bar sometime. Can I have that? Can I say, hey, I used to own a bunch of movie theaters?
Sure. Why not? Roll with it. It's never done me any good.
I think that theaters will. I think it's just that unique community experience that is a lot like a comedy club where there's a lot of outings that folks can have, but there's just something special about everybody getting together to see, especially a horror movie or a comedy where everybody's laughing or terrified all at the same time. Big event films that you don't want to have spoiled the next day. So there's plenty of room and there's plenty of opportunity for movie theaters to come back. And we see it even now with the appetite that folks have. Drive-ins are sold out. And drive-ins showing old movies, there were drive-ins that were packed showing a new Metallica concert a couple weeks ago. And so people want to have that big screen experience.
Yeah, but I think there's something kind of fun and kitschy about the drive-in experience. You know what I mean? I think that and of course, because of COVID, is probably the reason why. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And Sue, to that point, too, I've lost about 10 pounds during the pandemic. And so I can still fit into a trunk of a car.
Wow.
So I can be the guy that sneaks in.
I've gained 12 pounds during the pandemic, so I will not be in any trunk.
Is that our relationship? Is that every time I lose weight, you gain it and vice versa?
Yeah, it may be, Mark. It may be. So,
and being the only woman here, I am not talking to you about my weight.
Excellent. Probably good. So we're going to do an Emmy preview here. First of all, how are they going to do the Emmys? I know Jimmy Kimmel is hosting. Do you know how they're going to actually set them up in the age of COVID?
What I believe is going to happen is that you're going to have a number of different kind of setups with Kimmel doing the lion's share of the work, but you can have virtual presenters in the same way that we would all do a Zoom meeting, but something that's a lot more glossy, a lot more dressed up, some different sort of bells and whistles to keep an audience entertained, but more than anything, with sports coming back and with all these other competitive outlets coming back, I think that folks are ready for that kind of award season, and the lead up to it has not been a typical Emmys lead up because you can't have all those wine and dine parties that everybody's rubbing elbows at. So it's had to take a different sort of landscape this year, but it does seem that there's been studio lobbying and all of the normal things that we expect, the politicizing somewhat of trying to get an award won. And so I think this is going to run pretty much like a normal Emmy ceremony from that standpoint.
So what about like all the nominees they invited like on Zoom? Kind of, are we going to have the Brady Bunch, you know, squares of everybody when their names are called?
It's going to be a sought after link. You know, wouldn't it be great if somebody leaked it?
Yeah. No question.
Yeah, just so, everybody, if you're nominated for an Emmy, just make sure you mute yourself if you lose. I'm sorry. You got to hit the mute button if you didn't win.
So Mark, what is this the year of at the Emmys? A lot of times we say it's the year of what? It's a show. It's a trend. It's the year of what?
It's the year of rebirth for the Emmys because you have all these giant shows that just ended their run last year. And so you don't have Game of Thrones that is like a dragon just hovering over the entire landscape. You don't have something like Fleabag. And so there's a lot of possibilities for new talent, for new shows to shine. But that's not to say that we're not going to have some tearful farewells to some shows that we have fallen in love with that might take the place of something like a Game of Thrones or a Fleabag, where if you know it's the last season of a show, you say, well, that might be the thing that gets it over the top. So I'm thinking about shows like a Schitt's Creek that we're not going to see again. So could that be enough to put it over the top? I hope so because I love that show, but I think we're going to see that bubble up in a couple categories.
So you mentioned Schitt's Creek, which is, like you, one of my very favorite shows. And I think this is going to be the year, at least on the comedy side, of Schitt's Creek. Eugene Levy, fantastic. Catherine O'Hara, fantastic. Dan Levy's great. They've got it's such a good-hearted show. Like, it's the one show in the last 10 years that I could recommend to my mom. And my mom would fall in love with it, too. It just seems to be a show that transcends generation. And it's so good-hearted. It's such a feel-good story. I think that's going to carry a lot of weight at these awards.
It transcends virtually every demographic and every line, and it just gets people feeling good. And you don't get to say that about a lot of shows that can appeal to that many different people. And Schitt's Creek, I expect it to win Outstanding Comedy Series. I'm also a big fan of Curb Your Enthusiasm and have loved it forever. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel continues to be great. I just don't see Mrs. Maisel doing what we've seen Veep and shows like that do in the past, where it keeps winning. It won in 2018. I think that The Good Place might be some competition for Schitt's Creek, because The Good Place is also in that place of transitioning into retirement. And so you can bid a farewell to that one, but I think Schitt's Creek has got to be the front runner.
How much is a show that's off the beaten path, something like What We Do in the Shadows, how much does that hurt or help them?
I think it helps. In this particular year, it does. And I wouldn't always say that, because a lot of times off the beaten path shows, it's that old, it's an honor to just be nominated mindset. But we've seen surprises in the past with Emmys, and even earlier this year, the Golden Globes, when Rami won. And that was a little bit of a surprise to people, where you thought, oh, it's just nice to be nominated. Now, guy's on stage accepting his award, and that's a brilliant show. And so I think that if a quirky show can get into the lexicon in a way that no other show has been able to do, it's got a shot. And Schitt's Creek certainly has accomplished that.
You know, what I'm wondering about is, how did they start nominating 8 nominees for comedy series? Why do they have so many? It used to be just 5. Now it's 8.
That's a great question, and I don't have the answer for you as far as when we started doing that, but I know that the Oscars are the most stringent of award shows, where they never want to expand, and they reluctantly did so with the Dark Knight fiasco back in 2008 and animated movies getting in there. So they finally expanded the pool from 5 to 10 movies, but it's still 5 actors, 5 actresses. With the Emmys, I love the inclusiveness of this. I love that, hey, if you're a good show, we'll make room for you to get nominated.
What do you think are the standout snubs? Like, for me, comedy-wise, was Afterlife.
Afterlife is a good call. For me, personally, it was my favorite show that I base my week around, is Desus and Mero. They're just so funny, and they hit on a number of different pop culture aspects. They get into entertainment, but they also talk a lot about sports, and they have a lot of references of their beloved, awful New York Knicks. And I think that it hits a lot of buttons. And for whatever reason, that one was getting a lot of attention that it should get nominated, and just fell a little bit short.
On the drama side, I am all about Succession. I think Succession is the best show on TV, and virtually every actor from the show is nominated. Is this the year that Succession sort of cleans up?
I think so. Here's how good Succession is. The dad on it, Brian Cox, makes me want to buy a hamburger. He's on all those McDonald's commercials, and I can't say no, because I'm just thinking about him ordering me like I'm one of his sons, like, Roman, eat the cheeseburger. Like, I need to go to Mickey D's again, because with his authoritarian voice on the show, and then how his kids handle that, and all of the drama and the behind the back stabbings that go on that show, it's must-see television. And so while I agree with you, Steve, Succession is the front runner in a number of different categories. I think a few of those are going to be upset by Ozark. Not all of them. And I think drama series does go to Succession, but Ozark is still in play, possibly for Jason Bateman and Laura Linney.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of like every show that's on. The only show that I haven't seen is Mandalorian. But
it's like, great. But there's a kid, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not. I don't know. It's not really
baby Yoda. What do you have against Baby Yoda, Sue?
I have nothing against Baby Yoda, because that sounds like I'd be a very, very mean person.
You're not mean if you're against Baby Yoda. I'm going to end that an episode around, because Baby Yoda, the lore in The Mandalorian is that it's, yes, he's tiny, but he's also already like 50 years old. So
true.
He's already lived a nice life. You do not have to feel bad for turning your back on Mr. Baby Yoda.
On a baby. It's not really my cup of tea, that kind of show. But like Better Call Saul has... It just gets better and better to me. So this is such a tough category. You know, like Handmaid's Tale, I think is a brilliant show. Maybe people are like, I'm not sick of it, but I don't see it. I don't see it winning.
I have a hard time watching it. I have a hard time watching it.
It's so dark.
Yeah, it's
but
really
it's
bleak.
So good.
Yeah.
When you compare it to something like that is binge worthy, like I would put Better Call Saul in that category. Certainly The Crown Killing Eve is another one of those shows that fits into that quirky mold that we were talking about earlier. The one that I did, I think The Mandalorian, it's nice to get nominated, and Stranger Things, I feel like the appetite for that show from an award standpoint has kind of died down a little bit. I didn't really feel as strongly about season three or continuing to binge it like I did the first two seasons. So Handmaid's Tale, I would say, is in there. The Crown is in there. Better Call Saul, always a contender. And I think Giancarlo Esposito has a dark horse chance to win his category, but I would still say it's Succession over Ozark for the top two spots.
You know, to me, the two biggest snubs when it came to nominations were Bob Odenkirk and Rhea Seehorn for mm-hmm. Better Call Saul. I cannot mm-hmm. believe that those two were not nominated. I thought they both had unbelievable seasons on Saul.
Yeah, and that's the downside to having so many opportunities to get nominated is that you have, I mean, there's nobody that I look at in outstanding lead actor anyway, and I say, oh, we got to get them out of there. But I personally have not seen The Morning Show. I hear Steve Carell and Jennifer Aniston were both great in it.
It's a really good show, really good show.
Do you think she's good enough to win? Because I'm hearing that she could be the front runner.
You know, I can see her winning. Olivia Colman should win for The Crown. Olivia Colman's unbelievable in The Crown. But I think she won last year, and there's this idea of let's crown a golden girl like Jennifer Aniston. I have a feeling Jennifer Aniston might beat Olivia Colman and win that award.
Okay, somebody to keep your eye on in that category, though, is Sandra Oh from Killing Eve. I believe she has 9 nominations for an acting Emmy, but she has not won yet. So this could be
Susan Lucci. She's the Susan Lucci. And there's actually another big snub for me is Caitlin Dever from Unbelievable.
Ooh, good call.
My God. She was insanely good. Mm-hmm. She got so ripped off not getting nominated. And I guess that probably would have been supporting actress in a limited series, maybe?
Yeah, that's where I think it would have landed. And this is because I just don't get as up in arms about snubs for TV as I do for movies. And I think that's why we can all be polite adults about it, because we love all of this TV stuff and we digest all of it. But I don't think that we hold it quite as precious as movies. At least I don't. And so I love talking about it, but it's not going to keep me up at night thinking about who got snubbed in the same way.
Okay, Mark, we're gonna actually chart out the winners here, and I'm going to hold you to these predictions.
Let's do it. My mom has won her Emmy pool the last 3 years. Mom, I know you're listening. I will not let you down.
Okay, so Sue, Mark, and me. Let's start out with outstanding lead actor in a comedy series. Anthony Anderson, Blackish, Don Cheadle, Black Monday, Ted Danson, The Good Place, Michael Douglas, The Kominsky Method, Eugene Levy, Schitt's Creek, and Rami Youssef for Rami. Who wins that, Mark?
I love the Rami upset, but I do think it's going to be Eugene Levy for Schitt's Creek.
Sue?
I agree. Eugene Levy.
I will make it unanimous. Eugene Levy deserves it. I think he's fantastic. Always loved the guy. And I don't remember him ever winning another award. Like, for all of his great work over the years, I don't remember him winning anything.
He's just been around forever. I mean, he's had so many resurgences. He's kind of like John Travolta in the world of comedy. He's just had so many comebacks. I mean, remember when we loved him, and then where did he go? And then American Pie, and then he hit again. Then he goes away. Then he's back with Schitt's Creek. It's just the guy's always around.
Yeah. All right. Outstanding lead actress in a comedy series. Christina Applegate, Dead to Me. Rachel Brosnahan, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Linda Cardellini, Dead to Me. Catherine O'Hara, Schitt's Creek. Issa Rae, Insecure. Tracy Ellis Ross, Blackish. Start with you, Sue.
This is a tough one for me. I think Catherine O'Hara, because the show is going off the air and she is so brilliant. But my second is Christina Applegate, because she is so great in that.
She's great.
I think Catherine O'Hara.
If Mark? It was anyone else, then I would take Issa Rae over the field. But because it is Catherine O'Hara and she is transcendental great in Schitt's Creek, I got to go with my girl, the mom from Beetlejuice.
Yeah, she is the best thing on Schitt's Creek. Catherine O'Hara has got to win that award. So we're all unanimous so far. Outstanding lead actor in a drama series, Jason Bateman, Ozark, Sterling K. Brown, This Is Us, Steve Carell, The Morning Show, Brian Cox, Succession, Billy Porter, Pose, and Jeremy Strong, Succession. Mark, start with you.
Going with Jason Bateman for Ozark. Nikki gets
Ooh.
It.
Sue?
I don't know why I can't find it here. So who, lead actor in a drama? Okay. No, because I printed stuff out. Stop making fun of me.
It's okay, Sue. It's a podcast.
I think I'm going to go with Bateman, too. He's just so good in this.
Sign me up for Brian Cox, also known as the McDonald's guy, for Succession. I like at the end of that commercial, he goes, does that at the end of every spot. Brian Cox, brilliant on that show. All right, outstanding lead actress drama series, Jennifer Aniston, Morning Show, Olivia Colman, The Crown, Jodie Comer, Killing Eve, Laura Linney, Ozark, Sandra Oh, Killing Eve, and Zendaya for Euphoria. Sue, start with you.
No, don't start with me because I'm still looking here. Okay, I got it. Jodie Comer.
Jodie
Comer.
Okay,
I'm going with her co-star on Killing Eve. I'm going Sandra Oh.
And I am going to go with Jennifer Aniston for Morning Show. She's great in that show. Sue, did you like Morning Show?
You know, I only watched like three episodes, and it was okay for me, but I didn't watch the whole series.
You know what's weird? It got better and better. By the time you got to the end of the series, it really paid off. Although I will say this. I thought Reese Witherspoon was terrible in that show.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't crazy about her.
I hope she's not a listener to the Culture Pop podcast, but I thought she was terrible in the show.
Well, that's the thing. Just as a side note, when a show kind of starts a little slow, for me, it's like Love Connection. You know, would I go on another date with this show? You know what I mean? And if they don't get me right away, there's so much content to watch that I kind of like put it aside.
I agree. So it's the same thing that I feel if I'm in a relationship with someone. It's not really popping after a couple of dates. Then you just start asking your friends, hey, do you like person X? Do you like it? You rely on word of mouth to get to that third and fourth episode.
How far should you stick with a show when it's not really clicking for you? How many episodes?
If there's no word of mouth or pop behind it whatsoever, I say bail after two, because you never know from pilot to episode two what might have changed. But if people are really loving it and there's just something not clicking with you, stick with it, because then you have that to hang over your friends for all the hours that they wasted of your time forevermore.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for Sue to watch Game of Thrones. She did not watch any of Game of Thrones.
I watched the first episode of the last season.
Oh, that's enough. You've got it covered.
Hey, when I came to The Sopranos, you know the first episode I watched? The last episode of the last season.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Sue, by the way, why did you watch the first episode of the last season?
Because we did a joke. Because I had not seen any of the episodes, and we did a joke on the podcast, and I watched the first episode of last season, and then I asked you questions about the show.
That's right. Now I remember. And why did you start with the finale of The Sopranos, Mark?
I just knew everybody was going to be watching it and talking about it, and so I figured I'd check it out. And I was like, hey, we got a good Journey song, and then I thought my cable went out.
Yeah, don't spoil it for me, because I'm in season 6 of The Sopranos right now. It's a big cultural blind spot for me. I've never seen The Sopranos.
Oh, I went back and I did a Rotten Tomatoes vid. It was a Breaking Bad versus Sopranos. I like to pit pop culture against each other. Yeah. And I won't tell you who won, but I did watch the entire Sopranos for that, and you are in for a ride, my friend.
Excellent. Outstanding comedy series. We got Curb. We got Dead to Me. We got The Good Place, Insecure, The Kominsky Method, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Schitt's Creek, and What We Do in the Shadows. Sue?
I'm going to say Schitt's Creek.
I am going to agree with Sue. She's never steered me wrong.
I am going to go with Schitt's Creek, too. I think it is the year of Schitt's Creek. Although, I will tell you, What We Do in the Shadows, I think, is the most underratedly funny show on TV.
You know, I gave this a lot of thought, and I thought about this for 2 months. Johnny Dakota is Jackie Daytona, the funniest name they could have come up with.
Was that the one where he went undercover at the cowboy bar?
And Mark Hamill is a vampire chaser.
It is the funniest damn episode. And the when he has the little toothpick in his mouth, nobody recognizes him. But he takes the toothpick out, and it's clear that he's a vampire. It's a genius episode. It's an incredible show. It really is. It's hard to explain to people. Like, we've had a couple of people on from the show. We had Mark Prutch, and we had Harvey Gann. But it's hard to explain what that show is to it. Well, it's vampires, but it's a reality show. It's kind of like The Office, except with vampires. It's like hard to describe exactly what that show is to sell it to other people.
It's one of those shows that you just want to put on in front of someone who's never heard of it and don't give them any context for what they're watching and just let them just watch their reaction.
Yes. Right. Yes.
It's like a vampire real world.
Yes, it is. It's really a roommate comedy. It's a roommate comedy. All right. And the last category, Mark, here we go. Outstanding drama series. Better Call Saul, The Crown, Handmaid's Tale, Killing Eve, The Mandalorian, Ozark, Stranger Things, Succession. Mark.
All right. Well, as a huge Star Wars fan, I love that The Mandalorian's nominated.
Yep.
I think Ozark crushed it. And Ozark was one of those seasons where I loved the first two. I wasn't feeling the season of Ozark until it kicked in for me episode 5, episode 6. And then I loved the rest of it. But I think Succession is just too powerful. It's Netflix versus HBO. And I think HBO wins in sudden death.
Sue?
Succession, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Succession. I for me, the two best shows on TV this last year were Succession and Schitt's Creek. And Succession, do they have a season in the can, or did their production get halted before the pandemic? Do you know?
I believe they were already in pre-production when the pandemic began. I'm not sure what the update is, but that's one of those shows that you know that they're going to be ready to go and get cameras up and rolling as soon as they're allowed to. And because you know how big of an ESPN fan I am, I nominate Matthew McFadden. If they make a movie about ESPN from way back in the day, Matthew McFadden should be playing Keith Olbermann. Anybody want to challenge me on that?
No, no. I think Matthew McFadden can do about anything, but you're right. I can definitely see him as Olbermann. It's weird, too, when you hear him talk because he is, I don't know if he's British or Australian. He's one of those two.
Mm-hmm.
So you all of a sudden get the accent. I think woman that plays Shiv.
She's Australian.
She's Australian. There you go. And I think Matthew McFadden is British. But yeah, they're both great in it. Succession, to me, is the best show on TV. It's just, I mean, I hate to use this word because it sounds weird, but it's just the conniving is just delicious on that show. It's just like so fun to watch them go at each other. And Kieran Culkin, for me, just makes the show. He is so snarky and so funny in all those situations. He's like the truth teller, right? He's like the guy that'll say exactly what it is, even if it hurts somebody's feelings, and he'll get a laugh with it. I think he's incredible.
Yeah, well, I hate watching him in moments because you've known people like that in your own life. But if you just look at it through how brilliant his performance is, he's nonstop great in the show.
And one character that totally grew on me over the couple of seasons is the Greg character.
Oh, Greg!
Nicholas Braun. I mean, he is so perfect in that role.
Yeah.
And you know, after the season one end, I was like, oh, I don't know where they're going with this. I'm not sure if this is going to work out. And then the season two ending, I'm like, whatever this show wants to do to me emotionally, I am here for it. Sign me up.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we all think Schitt's Creek and Succession will be the big winners on Emmy night, which is coming Sunday night. Sunday night. Hey, Mark, let me ask you a couple other things while we got you here. When do you think we'll see blockbusters in movie theaters? Like the big movies, they're holding back. They're holding back Bond. They're holding out, holding back, I think, Fast 9. I think it's Fast 9. They're holding that back to really big movies. When do we see those?
Right. Well, Fast and Furious 9 was that first movie when this started. We weren't sure if we were going to be in this for 2 weeks, for a month, whatever. And they said, no, we're delaying our release an entire year. So that's not coming out until April at the earliest next year. Now, with Bond had already been pushed back to this Thanksgiving. And so I think they're going to try to stick with that release date. So you could see some blockbusters come back around Thanksgiving. You also had Top Gun Maverick that was supposed to come out this summer that is now delayed to December. So I think by the time the holiday season is around, you're going to have movie offerings. I don't think you're going to have blockbusters in terms of how much money they're making comparatively to a normal year, but I think you're going to have audiences returning to theaters in droves starting with the holiday season.
And do you think the pandemic has killed the art film? You know, I used to own an art house theater, and we played all of those small independent films that now seem to be all going straight to streaming. Is that dead as a concept, the art film?
I think the pandemic, in an odd silver lining way, has helped it because everybody's at home now and they're looking for new inventive ways to get content to watch because they're tired of whatever the networks was. They're tired of the normal mainstream Netflix and Hulu's of the world. And so they're looking for alternative programming. They're also looking at other avenues to stream things. So it doesn't matter if you're on Fandango now, if you're on Vudu, whatever you're looking at, there's new offerings. And so I think that people are doing more research. They're doing their due diligence into what else can I watch that is off the beaten path. It is sort of that quirky thing that we were talking about with Schitt's Creek. And so if anything, I think the art house film has a greater audience because you have more captive people watching and hungry for content in their homes. And if Christopher Nolan doesn't want to release Tenet at home right now, and the big blockbusters want to wait it out until movie theaters come back, well, that's just more room for a smaller art house film to come in and satisfy people watching from the comfort of their homes.
All right. That's good news. That's good news. All right. Hey, listen, Mark, thank you very much for doing this. We appreciate it. I hope we can have you back. Mark Ellis from Rotten Tomatoes. Thank you.
Hey, I love hanging out with y'all. And the fact that we get the Emmys on September 20th means that I get something to look forward to because I'm a Washington football fan and I need something positive in my life.
Well, it's not going to be the Washington football team. I'm sorry to report. Mark, thank you, man. All right, there you have it. Mark Ellis from Rotten Tomatoes, and the Emmys are coming up. I am, Sue, an award show junkie. I will watch any award show, even those meaningless ones that happen leading up to the Oscars in the fall. This is probably the only award show that we get this year because there will be no Oscars. The Oscars have been postponed until 2021. So if you're an award show fan, this is your one chance Sunday night.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I'm... I have to tell you that one show that I kind of dissed to you, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah, why do you not like that show?
Okay, I'll tell you what just happened. So I watched the first season and I really liked it. I love the genre. I mean, it's just shot beautifully. The music is great. The art direction is amazing. But I wasn't, I mean, and I did like her the first season because it was like, whoa, this is something new and I'm a comic and wow, this is kind of cool. The second season I just felt wasn't very strong. And what I realized that I wasn't enjoying about her is that I didn't feel like she was really funny. And I that's a tough one when, you know, she's a comic and I felt like she wasn't really pulling it off. So today, I watched the first and last season of first and last episode of this past season.
Yep.
And I kind of fell in love with it all over again because I think her stand-up got much better.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because she's been doing it more. I feel like she's a lot more comfortable in her stand-up comedian skin. I think the jokes were funnier. And I really, really liked it. I'm going to go back and watch, you know, all the rest of the episodes, although I know how it ends now.
This is the year that she goes to Miami, right? Or did I just spoil it for you?
Oh, I guess I saw, maybe I didn't see the season then. Because the season I saw, she performed at the Apollo. Was that?
Yeah, you're a season behind.
I'm a season behind. Okay.
Yeah, she goes to the Fountain Blue in Miami.
Okay.
And performs, yeah.
Okay.
No, you know what? It's a great show. And you mentioned a couple of things. First of all, the production design is incredible on that show.
It's insane. Yeah,
I mean, there is so much attention to detail. And the cast, top to bottom, is really good. Alex Borstein's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Jane Lynch, in a supporting role on that show, is just absolutely hilarious. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious. I love the show. It's a very crowded year. Yeah. Go back to after Sue's answer. When Sue was talking about Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Yeah. Okay, I'll pick it up. Yeah, I mean, I love Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and you mentioned it. The production design is incredible. Every single detail, it's incredible. And the cast from top to bottom, Alex Borstein, great. Jane Lynch in a supporting role, fantastic. Tony Shalhoub, always, always, always good. That show is just a pleasure to watch. This year, though, like we said with Mark, I mean, Schitt's Creek is the show. That is the show.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Did you watch it?
I didn't watch it this season.
You didn't.
Mm-mm.
So you're not as into it.
I just started watching other things, and I just didn't have a chance to watch it. But I like it. It's very, very funny. And, you know, the fact that I voted it to win and I voted for the actors to win, that's just because I just think they're brilliant on the show, regardless of whether I saw this last season. You know?
Yeah. It'll be fun. Jimmy Kimmel will be hosting the Emmy Awards on Sunday night. We'll see how they do it. I would imagine, can they get 5 nominees all on Zoom at the same time and then one of them wins and gives a speech? I mean, technically, if they try to do that, I would think that'd be one of the most difficult technical things to possibly pull off. All those people, all those nominees, all those categories. If they're able to do it, congratulations. Because that is technically just a nightmare, I think, to pull off. But I'm looking forward to the Emmys. I'm looking forward to Schitt's Creek and Succession absolutely cleaning up. Hey, Sue, great to talk to you.
It's great to talk to you, too.
I love our talks.
You make it sound like we just talk to each other like, you know, occasionally, and we're not really doing a show.
Well, we talk to each other only when we do the show.
Yeah, no, well, not really.
Mostly. Yeah. Mostly. Yeah.
I know. But you say it like, that was really nice to hear from you.
Nice talk. Nice to talk to you.
I haven't talked to you in a while.
Yeah. All right. Sue, that'll wrap this up. Episode number 76 in the books. Enjoy the Emmy Awards. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. We appreciate that as always. And thanks a lot. We'll see you next time on the Culture Pop Podcast.
Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. We'll see you next week for an all-new episode of Culture Pop.